Penguin Random House Audio presents A Song for You, My Life with Whitney Houston. This is the author, Robin Crawford. To my mom, Janet, brother Marty, and sister Rabina, for your undying love, you are always with me. To the most amazing beings, my children, Jillian and Jeremy, you make every day entirely brighter. You are my greatest love of all. And finally, to my one and only, the one with whom I live adventurously, lay my head next to at night and awaken to at daybreak. My endless love, Lisa. I still see your face from the first time we met, and I draped my scarf around your neck. You are everything. Introduction. Why now? Why did I make the decision to write this book when I could have remained silent for the rest of my days, keeping my memories all to myself? If you are a fan of Whitney Houston, you probably know my name. Google me, and you'll see my face at events and my name in articles. Whitney and I met as teenagers and spent the next 22 years together as she became one of the most popular and beloved global artists of our generation. It was the relationship that would shape my young adult years, professionally and personally. Ours is a story of loyalty and trust, of two women who made a pact to protect and rely on each other. We shared a dream that became a journey, and that journey took us from East Orange, New Jersey, to New York City, and then around the world meeting superstars and heads of state. This is a story of manipulation, control, hunger for power, inexperience, race, AIDS, mental illness, the pressure the entertainment industry places on women, the bonds of family, and the importance of putting oneself first. Above all, it is a story of enduring friendship. Some have said that I have experienced more than my share of loss. In examining my life, so many memories returned, both beautiful and painful. Writing this book forced me to confront the reality of death and relive the losses of my mother, my brother, and my best friend. The process allowed me, drove me to grieve, to face sorrow, something I previously worked hard to bury. But it also provided the opportunity to get to know my loved ones better and to appreciate what I learned from each of them. Believe me, I've done my best to stay out of the spotlight, keeping quiet while others painted their own pictures of me and of us. In the 19 years since I left Whitney's company, I have been pursued relentlessly to share my story. And since her death and that of her daughter, I have been saddened and frustrated by the way she and her legacy have been misrepresented. I believe it is my duty to honor my friend and to clarify the many inaccuracies about myself and about who Whitney was. I feel compelled to remind people of her greatness, to lift her remarkable legacy. The Whitney I know was big-hearted, determined, unselfish, private, hilarious, and confident in her gifts. I hope to help listeners understand and recognize fully the person behind that face, voice, and image. Yes, in the end, it was tragic, but the dream and the rise were beautiful. I owe it to my friend to share her story, my story, our story. And I hope that in doing so, I can set us both free. Chapter 1. The first time I met Whitney Elizabeth Houston. In the summer of 1980, I rode my black Kabuki 22-speed bike across East Orange. The phone had gotten me out of bed, but the wind in my face was waking me up. Coach Clark, my high school basketball coach, had called to tell me that she had a job for me at the East Orange Community Development Center, and within minutes, I was out the door. I was starting my second year of college in the fall, and I owed it to Coach Clark to show. I raced Main Street, the summer sun beginning to pulse in the sky. I sped up to the glass front building, jumped off my bike, and walked into a dimly lit space crowded with people, tables, and chairs lined up against the walls. I found Coach Clark down the hall in the back, and she smiled, gave me a big hug, and then turned and handed me a stack of papers to distribute. Clark could have tapped anyone for the job, but she knew she could count on me. I've always been vain about my hair, and in those days, I would wash it and then beg my little sister, Rabina, affectionately called Bina, to braid it. Other times, I'd set it on pink foam rollers. Once I took them out, my coils would loosen, and by the third day, my afro would be amazing. It was day three, so I felt cute in my green shorts, the color of grass, light green t-shirt, white Nike sneakers, and pristine white tube socks. I walked around the room carrying a stack of camp counselor enrollment forms and clutching a bunch of pens. Then I came across a girl I'd never seen before. I didn't notice her at first because she was sitting in the back against the wall, but I paused as I handed her the paperwork. She simply stopped me in my tracks. The girl wore a red, blue, and gray plaid silk blouse, slim-fitting knee-length shorts, and red-striped Adidas Gazelles. She had a gold watch necklace around her neck, and her sandy brown hair was pulled back, topped by a visor emblazoned with the Red Cross logo. Her skin was peachy brown, and her eyes caught the misty light. "What's your name?" I asked. "Whitney Elizabeth Houston," she said. I found her response humorous, different. Who gives their first, middle, and last names? I asked where she lived, and she said Dodtown, across from the McDonald's. My cousins live right near there, and I often spent the night with them. I'd worked at that very McDonald's throughout my junior year of high school. Later that day, I learned she attended an all-girls private school and was a singer. Her mother had founded the Sweet Inspirations, background singers to big stars like Elvis Presley and Aretha Franklin, and her cousin was Dionne Warwick. Before I moved on, I gave her one last look and told her I'd keep an eye out for her. I don't know why I felt the need to say that, but I did. How had I never seen nor heard of her? Summer counselors took kids to participate in activities in various East Orange parks. I chose to work with kids aged 6 to 11 in Columbian Park, which happened to be near my high school on the other side of town where Whitney lived, so coincidentally, she chose the same. I worked the morning session, so by midday, I was free for basketball and able to run full-court games with others at Columbian in the afternoons. Whitney was scheduled in the slot after me, so I'd pass the campers on to her and go do my thing. When I'd come back from playing ball, she'd be dismissing the campers, and we started spending time together. I'd just turned 19, and Whitney was about to turn 17. I had no idea where things with her were going to go, but I did know that the summer of 1980 was shaping up to be some kind of wonderful. Whitney Elizabeth was sweet and low-key, but alluring. She carried herself with outward grace and confidence. Yet underneath, she was like every other young woman at that age. She was strikingly beautiful, but she didn't feel that way, always picking apart her looks. I couldn't understand where all this insecurity was coming from. One day early on in our friendship, I rolled up to her mother's mid-sized white Cape Cod house. As I pulled up in my mom's car, there she was, standing in the doorway just above the steps, slender, in a t-shirt with a cotton sweater tied around her neck. Sure that she could see my face, I smiled. She was wearing the worst pair of jeans I'd ever seen. They were narrow at the top and wide from the knee down. I'm certain she saw me grinning as she walked towards the car because once...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?